handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. Hey, what the fuck? It's not Tuesday. Well, it's Tuesday somewhere, as someone might say, but it's not. It's actually not Tuesday anywhere. It is Wednesday, July 14th, 11:30 a.m., and I decided to do a bonus episode this week. Many things were factored in. My internet's been down for a full day, so work has been delayed, so I will upload this. When this uploads, that's just when I get internet access again. But Fios, most overrated cable company? I would say yes, because everybody complains about theirs, but Fios is always treated as this, like, buildings will advertise, like, we have Fios. And it's like, ooh, I guess I'm moving into a luxury building. They have Fios, honey. Fios is overrated. The only cable company I've ever been fully satisfied with, to be honest, at least when I lived in Manhattan, was RCN. Don't ask me why. Maybe because they were a little smaller outfit or whatever, but I was immensely pleased with the pricing, the service. The DVR was a TiVo. It was, I never had a single complaint. And I until they had to, like, raise their rates, like, I exhausted all discounts. And that's just normal, but that's not their fault. Everybody does that. You lure in the customers. But I stuck with them while prices went up until they went way up. And then I was like, okay, 3 years RCN. Now I got to go back to Time Warner, who then became, who now identifies as Spectrum. Please use Spectrum's preferred pronouns, which are he, they. Anyway, the reason I'm doing this bonus episode is A, I'm bored. I'm having my green tea right now, and then I'm headed to the gym, bro, because I'm just about that grind, about that lifestyle now. So my plan is by my 43rd birthday to be in the same shape as I was on my 30th birthday. How about that for hashtag goals, folks? But so far, diet has not broken. So we're on Monday was day 15, 16, 17. We're on day 17 of the diet, folks. Many of us never thought we'd see the day where JL would make it to day 17. And we're here. We're queer. Get used to it. What I wanted to do was the Emmy nominations came out yesterday, and I have opinions and I have takes. And then I thought to myself, well, my social media accounts suck anyway. Shout out to everybody who quickly tells me that they won't be attending my shows. For some reason, everybody is the sloth in Zootopia when it comes to getting tickets to my show. But if you are not coming to my show, boy, are you Usain Bolt with public proclamations of how you're going to be out of town or somewhere else. It's just a funny phenomenon that I see. Maybe it's an ego-centered thing. And I'm talking to, like, for someone on Facebook who I had an exchange with, not referring to people who've been to my shows before. I'm talking about novices. My favorite excuses so far for not coming to the show. I got harassed by multiple people to come to Boston. Figured that was a safe city for me to go to. And, you know, one guy told me his wife was working that night, so he couldn't go. And I go, are you working that night? No? Just can't go? Okay, cool. you know, this is the life of a comedian. But then, of course, because I engage on social media, I don't ignore everybody. I see everybody letting me know, oh, I'll be away that weekend. It's like, then you didn't have to say anything. You could have just not gone to the show. But for some reason, a little bit about you wants it to be about you. Because I don't even know if you live in... Most people, I don't know where you live. So you... The first introduction we have to any personal details shouldn't be you telling me you're not coming to my show. Because that's just not a good way for us to build a fan entertainer relationship, is that you only chime in when giving me bad news for my career. Just a word to the wise. So if you're not coming to my shows, that's okay. In fact, I expect 99.7% of my fans to not come to my shows because that's what comedy is now. But if you are coming to the show, let me know. And if you're not, then don't. But once again, to reiterate, Boston, Philly, Raleigh, New York. Big shows in all those cities, so please attend if you can. And if you can't, you may keep it to yourself. I hereby give you righteous prick permission to not share with me news that will just, be like a paper cut to my psyche. Nothing catastrophic, but just, you know, hey, Boston. Oh, you're not coming to Boston. Okay, well, that got my hopes up slightly. You're coming to Boston when? Ba-ba-ba-ba. Oh, I'll be out of town that day. Okay. Cool. Anyway, I wanted to talk about the Emmys. But I felt like social media, I'm not looking to stir up controversy. I'm not looking to get into annoying exchanges with people whose opinions on art I don't respect. So I thought I'd just share with you guys my takes on the Emmys and some of the most egregious choices that the Emmys made this year. And also One of the overarching themes of Half Blackface, my soon-to-be award-snubbed special recording October 23rd in New York City, tickets available now at jlcomedy.com/calendar. One of the themes of it will be not just my straddling the line racially, which is why my autobiography will be called Middleman, coming soon to a self-published, poorly selling book near you. But it's also comedically. I think I straddle the middle. And every comedian seems to want to think themselves in the middle, but most aren't. I've seen this among several white comedians recently. It's a nice trend, which is when their career plateaus, whether it plateaus at a good level, a bad level, or somewhere in between. But when it plateaus, it always feels a little bit like failure. And it seems that the go-to move for the plateauing white male comedian and some white women, but mostly white male comedians, is to wholeheartedly embrace attacks on a sort of non-existent, vague left-wing boogeyman of political correctness and liberals. And I've seen this more and more where my opinion is when you see a white male comedian complaining about cancel culture too much, those are the dying cries of a comedy career. You know, that's the deathbed of a comedy career, and it rises like a bigoted phoenix as a right-wing businessman. Now, they may still call themselves a comedian, but they are now trying to tap into that Trumpian thing, which is, well, you know, you can't go wrong bitching about cancel culture in the left. There's always going to be an audience for that, including some people in the center who thinks it makes them seem more centered and just and even-handed to also shit on the left. And I've seen this a lot, and I hate that, and I don't want to be part of that at all. I have my opinions on comedy, but I let my comedy speak for it. I'm not really trying to use my comedy to... I'm not looking to use comedy spaces to make non-comedy points. Like if I'm posting a comedy video, I want it to be funny, not just like, look at me owning the libs because they're out of control. And then I've also said on the left in comedy, it seems that we're now in an era of feeling good and identity. And I don't mean that necessarily in the most cynical way and all entirely race-based, but what I harp back to is the people who kept informing me that I was stealing from Sarah Cooper and the people who were telling me that seeing a black woman mock Trump was just more powerful and therefore funnier. And, you know, that obviously bothered me as I've gone through it before on several levels. It was like I felt like I was being stripped of my comedy dignity, my comedy work, and my ethnic heritage all in one, all for the sake of some left-wing non-comedy fan to feel righteous about themselves and their comedy choices. And so I have found that the middle space is increasingly thin. I'm not so much a bipartisan person as I am. I just want to live in the same comedy space. It's not about, I poke fun at both. I don't take note of how much I'm making fun of one side or the other. I simply do comedy from my perspective and my voice without a further agenda of, I'm attacking both sides, therefore I'm more right. No. If one side is right 90% of the time, then defending the other side 40% of the time just makes you 40% dumb. But just to be even-handed. But it keeps bugging me about comedy. And I see it, and I've complained about this before, but the Emmys this year I felt like took it to another level. Now, I've got my list of Emmy stuff here. And you guys may disagree with me, and if you want to be wrong, that's okay. But I felt like this was a safer space to discuss this stuff. Because feel free to comment on the Podomatic page or on social media, but I didn't want to put this out to the broader audience and just have some people, feeling attacked, having their opinions. It's subjective. I'm one of those people who I don't believe all comedy is subjective. I think there is some comedy that if you like it, you're stupid, or you have poor taste. You're free as an American or a person living in America to enjoy whatever you like, but it doesn't mean that you have good taste. But comedy. Let's just get to it right now. Ted Lasso, folks. I enjoyed Ted Lasso, but I'll be damned if we're going to continue living in this Schitt's Creek world of comedy where feel good is now the same power as hilarious. You know, Eastbound and Down, season one, just as an example, got no Emmy nominations. It's one of the five best seasons of TV comedy I've ever seen. And it got no nominations. And it continued to have a very solid four-season run. But that first season was just remarkable. Was it feel-good comedy? No, because the main character was a vulgar racist. Was it, you know what felt good about Eastbound and Down? Laughter. The laughter felt good. I didn't feel life-affirming joy when I watched the show. I felt laughter, belly aches, great comedic performances. And I said to myself, that's a great comedy because it took the first main mission of comedy, which is to make me laugh, and delivered body blows. Now, Ted Lasso, I liked it more than Schitt's Creek, but it is of the same vein. It is of the same. Sometimes you just want to feel, it's like so pleasant. It's like you're watching, it's so good. How great is this show? How great am I for thinking this great, fun, nice show is great? Aren't I actually great? Because I'm part of the Ted Lasso is great community. Schitt's Creek was a worse comedy than Ted Lasso. And I liked them both. So this is not a they suck complaint. But perhaps it's because I am in a purgatory in my own comedy career that seeing hilarious shows take a back seat to nice shows and then making nice shows the signature comedies. Schitt's Creek did what no comedy in history has ever done at the Emmys. It swept everything. Veep didn't do that. Arrested Development didn't do that. Modern Family didn't do that. Seinfeld didn't do that. The Cosby Show didn't do that. Cheers didn't do that. All in the Family didn't do that. The Mary Tyler Moore Show didn't do that. The Honeymooners didn't do that. None of them did that. So Schitt's Creek has, like, you know, a claim to greatest comedy ever. Just on the stats. If this were sports, you know, you'd have people claiming it could be the best ever. It's nowhere near the best comedy ever. To me, I think it was a joke that it even beat Veep, to be honest. Did it beat Veep, or did something else beat, or did something else beat Veep? Did, like, Fleabag beat Veep? Fleabag, don't get me fucking started on Fleabag. Anyway, Ted Lasso is a really nice show. It's also nominated for Best Actor. Two actresses nominated for Best Supporting Actress, which I'm not so mad at because I did like both actresses in the show. And then four actors nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Four. I didn't even know they had that many supporting actors eligible, and God, if I know who the fuck they all are. Four. Four supporting actors. So the show got seven acting nominations. So they're already saying it's poised to potentially have a Schitt's Creek type run. And this is bad. This is bad for comedy. Because, and I know, yes, the easy Price is Right $1 bet answer here is, who gives a shit about awards shows? Yes, you can always play that card. But as comedy's public editor / ombudsman, I feel it's my job to still point these things out, because people should not be accepting nice as the true definition of funny. And I think I think because of the climate of comedy, we're now headed towards this nice is going to be what people really want out of their comedy. The other comedies, I was also disappointed to see Cobra Kai nominated. And I'll tell you why. Cobra Kai seasons 1 and 2 were fucking great. Season 3 kind of stunk. Like, I was telling people to watch Cobra Kai, like, a year and a half before Netflix got it, because I thought, and of course I told some of my closest friends, you got to watch this, just get the free trial. I don't understand what it is with people, like, why my advice, fans take my advice, friends tell me to fuck off, but loved the show, but wouldn't do the free trial with YouTube to get it, like, 2 years ago. So I don't get it. But, yeah, Cobra Kai season 3, I thought stunk. Like, it was bad to the point where I was like, I guess I'll watch season 4, but holy shit, was this a drop off. Seasons 1 and 2, which are, they're all on Netflix. And that was my favorite also last year, among the many fucking stupid people on social media who tried to school me on whatever came to their mind. They were like, I think Cobra Kai is probably the best season of comedy on TV right now. And I go, yeah, it's from YouTube 2.5 years ago. Fuck off. Like, don't try to own me. This is my space, bitch. And then there's shows I haven't watched. Emily in Paris, Hacks, which I do want to watch. The Flight Attendant, which I thought was good but overrated. Pen 15, which I tried and didn't really enjoy. And the Kaminsky Method, which I tried on Netflix and sort of just found to be not worth my time. Oh, and Blackish. Which I still watch, but I feel like it's past its prime for sure. It's a good thing that it's ending, because it had a very good run, but it's sort of done. Now, one of the shows that Peacock was hoping would get nominated was Girls 5 Eva. Do I think Girls 5 Eva is as good as Kimmy Schmidt or 30 Rock? No, because I'm mentioning that because it's from Tina Fey's group or production outfit. But did I laugh hard at some... Like, do I think it's equal to Ted Lasso? Yes. Like, so, but I don't think either of them is amazing, but I actually probably enjoyed overall Girls 5 Eva a little more, because once episode three of Girls 5 Eva, let me put it this way. Episode 3 of Girls 5 Eva is better than any episode of Ted Lasso. That I will stand by. That shit made me howl. There were things in that, and it saved it because I said to the Righteous Girlfriend, I said, I'll watch. We watched two episodes and I was like, this is okay. Like it's, you know, but there's so much out there. I said, I'll give it one more episode. It was almost like Tina Fey, who I truly do believe is my soulmate. great calves, incredible sense of humor, quirky, cute, you know, that's all I'm going to say on that. Okay. Not afraid of stalking Tina Fey. You didn't think Ron Reagan would show up to the bonus episode. Do you realize that I've made, there's, you know, 700 to 1,000 people a week who are really getting intimately aware of Ron Reagan Jr. He should be sponsoring this show. The show is sponsored by Smug Americans Against God. Smug Americans Against God. Smag. But that third, and then I watched the third episode and I was howling, and I'm giving away a spoiler. But when the music from the Daily podcast, the New York Times Daily podcast comes on, and then the main character's son starts like flossing, it was, God, so good. So damn funny, that whole episode. And then the show really felt like it was at a different level from that point on. Like the best writers were sick for the first two episodes. And then they were like, okay, we're back. Let's fucking do this. But that got snubbed. But I'm like, but it made me laugh more than, I mean, Flight Attendant is pretty much like a quirky thriller. And this started with Transparent. All due respect to friend of the podcaster, Bradley Whitford, the great Emmy nominated actor this year again. Emmy winning and Emmy nominated actor, whose wife was in Transparent. And I remember watching Transparent, and SNL picked up on this like a year later. They did a phenomenal sketch during the Tom Hanks episode, the famous Tom Hanks episode with Black Jeopardy, which was one of the greatest episodes of SNL I've ever seen. They did like a video, you know, like a digital short on Transparent, and it was hilarious because it was epic drama and shrill and upsetting, but then every review was like, it's a half hour, so it's a comedy. And I was like, yes, because that's what I've been complaining about. I said, just because something's a half hour or well done doesn't mean it's the best comedy. Like, I still maintain this. Something About Mary, okay? Well done movie, hilarious comedy. Ace Ventura, hilarious movie, not a very good movie. Young Frankenstein, great movie, great comedy. So I would never give Ace Ventura best comedy, because I think you need to have a certain level of quality to the work. But I would never give a well done, not funny movie best comedy over a mediocrely done funny movie, because I still think funny should be the whole point, the main point. But yeah, it seems like it's a lot of feel good shit. But I, like I said, I haven't seen Emily in Paris. I'm looking forward to watching Hacks. Gene Smart is great, and that's like a comedy, a stand up comedy sort of based show. So I'm excited about that. But the Ted Lasso thing reminds me of Schitt's Creek, and I don't as I plan my departure from comedy. Which I'm always planning. It's my departure from comedy is like Neil McCauley in Heat. You know, always be prepared to walk away in 30 seconds flat. Or maybe it's like Breaking Bad, you know, where the random guy, which was continued actually in the Jesse standoff movie, El Camino, I think it was called on Netflix, which was actually pretty good. Where, you know, there's that guy who's got passports ready for you. It's like a one-time deal. You bring him a bag of cash and he gives you an entirely new identity and you're gone. Brain fart. But comedy, I just don't want to be in a comedy world that increasingly becomes divided between, I just want to feel nice. I want comedy to make me feel good about me.
And then the flip side becomes, you know what the problem is? Cancel culture, the left. Here's a, here's my 98th sketch about the left. I'm a varied artist with one target and one thesis only to all of my work. I'm a real comedian. It's a disgusting, sad landscape that I see on the horizon for comedy. And these nice comedies seem to reinforce that. But I'm telling you, if Eastbound and Down season one, you know, it would be like Ted Lasso is 41-0 with 19 knockouts, a great technician in the ring. And Eastbound and Down is 29-5 with 28 knockouts. They get in the comedy show ring together, and Eastbound and Down like bloodies Ted Lasso in the third round. Like the ref steps in and calls it and goes, I'm sorry, this is not a fair comedy fight. Ted Lasso just came into the ring to dance and to give the people a nice show and just to feel like they've watched a beautiful matchup of sportsmen. And Eastbound and Down is like, oh, I came in here to knock his fucking head off, and that's why I won the fight. That's how I feel about comedy. Not every comedy has to be mean. I think fucking Tina Fey goes for the knockout. It's not necessarily mean, but I mean, Kimmy Schmidt. I mean, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt season one is infinitely better than every season of comedy that's nominated that I've seen. But whatever. The people like what they like, you know? Once again, we had Don't Worry, Be Happy. We have Lip Sync. We have Ted Lasso. So... And I know I always sound like somebody who hates things, but I don't. I just want things properly ordered. I want things properly ranked. And Ted Lasso being anointed the next great American comedy is fucking absurd. And Schitt's Creek, the best parts of Schitt's Creek were the non-funny parts, like the gay romance of the sun were the most moving and deeply kind of realistic feeling and emotional moments of the show. And they weren't funny. But they were good. Doesn't make it a great comedy just because it had good stuff. Anyway, drama. Well, I've seen most of the things. I can't believe The Mandalorian has like leads with the most nominations. I know many of you like The Mandalorian. I think it's fun for the family. If I were 13, The Mandalorian would be my favorite show of all time. But I'm 42, and it's it just makes me miss Game of Thrones. Because the fact that Game of Thrones did what it did, and Mandalorian has just like stepped into this kind of, you know, vacuum of, well, we should probably nominate a big popular fantasy sci-fi type show because we had Game of Thrones, is disrespectful to the legacy of Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, I don't give a shit what you thought of the last season. Game of Thrones is one of the five or six greatest dramas ever in TV history in terms of scope, ambition, and execution. It just is. It is. It was Game of Thrones, they could have farted for an hour in the season finale, and it would be one of the five greatest dramas, in my opinion. What are those dramas, in my opinion? I'm glad you didn't ask. 6 Feet Under, The Wire, The West Wing, Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad. Those are my five. I know there's shows that were earlier than that, and people love The Sopranos, and I'm finishing. I just finished season two of The Sopranos rewatch. So it's, there's arguments to be had, but the idea that, like, Mandalorian is basically just doing the same thing that Game of Thrones did is absurd and obscene. It doesn't deserve, as far as I'm concerned, any nominations outside of sci-fi, outside of special effects sort of categories. People were talking about Pedro Pascal for best actor in a drama, and I was like, are you fucking high? He it's basically voiceover work and not particularly like deep work. And I say this as somebody who thinks Pedro Pascal should have won an Emmy as guest actor or supporting actor for, or should have at least been nominated for supporting actor for season four of Game of Thrones. And the most snubbed goddamn show, after The Wire, the most snubbed show in like TV history to me is Narcos. And he was phenomenal in the first few seasons of Narcos. But as we've discussed, drug shows about people of color do not get nominated. Only if you are a white person driven to the edge of your whiteness and comfort and then start doing drugs or dealing drugs will you get nominated. So nothing for you Snowfall, nothing for you Narcos, nothing for you The Wire, everything for you Breaking Bad, Ozark, and Weeds. Anyway, but drama for me, there's three shows I want to talk about. The Boys,
happy it got nominated. I love that show. I think that show is fucking incredible. If any show should get the mantle from Game of Thrones for the fantasy sci-fi elite throne, it's The Boys, not the fucking Mandalorian. I have not watched Bridgerton. I have no interest. Lovecraft Country, I'm probably going to give another try. I watched 1.5 episodes and was just kind of like, it was weird. I liked the pilot and then I just started watching the second one. And I think my attention span or my standards just get so high the more backed up like my streaming lists get, my Quayways, that I end up losing patience quickly with shows, but I can give Lovecraft Country another try. So I'm not gonna make a judgment there. But I just, the second episode kind of lost me, and I was like, you know what? I don't know if I don't know where this is going. I'm good leaving it because there's too much on my list. The Crown, which I think is the best drama, right? Like season 4 of The Crown, I think should sweep this shit. As much as I love The Boys, I think The Crown is phenomenal. But what I'm already anticipating is, you know, you have many shows with people of color in the drama category. And of course, if The Crown goes on to win like best actress in a drama, best drama, you know, it will lead to, I'm sure, some sort of, oh, fuck the Emmys. Like they are not recognizing people of color. This is another white show, all from people who've never watched The Crown. But Crown is amazing. And this season was amazing, and I hope the guy wins for actor. I hope Diana wins for actress. It was superb. And then we get to a little show. I've seen This Is Us. I enjoy it. I don't know that this was its strongest season at all, but I do enjoy the show. And then we get to Pose. Now Pose made history, and here's your real reason why I didn't want the smoke on social media. Not that I couldn't defend it, of course. Not that I couldn't defend the show, but I mean, not that I couldn't defend my opinion on the show, but I've seen 3 episodes of Pose. I saw 2 episodes in the first 2 episodes of season 1, and I saw the series finale this year. Righteous Girlfriend was a fan of the show. So what I can say to you is, MJ Rodriguez, who got nominated for Pose, played Blanca, made fun of Blanca a few weeks ago on the podcast, maybe a month ago, maybe a little more than that, when I was saying I just saw this and it's some of the worst acting and writing I've ever seen in my life. I stand by that. And at the risk of sounding like one of those right-wing douchebags, sometimes there's room. Sometimes there's room to praise a show and to make room for others and to expand and showcase diversity where it's not such an obvious sort of pander. But my God, I could not believe that she got nominated, and I could not believe that show got nominated for Best Drama. And I know it's an important show, and I don't say that flippantly. I don't say that like it's important. Yes, is it? No, it is. It's a show that will go down in history for how it showcased maybe the most marginalized people. It expanded opportunities for trans actors. That's all good stuff. That doesn't mean the show's any good, and it doesn't make the acting good. And some of the acting and writing was some of the worst I've seen. And I don't know. Like I was like dumbfounded when I saw that. I was like, I get what they're doing, but like, whew, that's a tough sell for me. Cause I think the writing on that show was borderline atrocious. And I thought the acting in particular, I thought MJ Rodriguez was like the opposite of a standout. I thought in a show with acting ranging from decent to bad, she sort of stood out to me as like, whew, this is, that's tough. That's tough for your lead to sort of be that high school drama level of craft. But I guess I'm wrong.
So yeah, but then we get to the supporting actor and actress in a comedy category, and oh boy, supporting actor, 4 Ted Lassos, 1 Paul Reiser from the Kominsky Method, and 2 SNLs, Kenan Thompson, who, you know, just gets that. He's fine. Fuck it. He's fine. But no, I wouldn't. I don't, you know, I guess you stay on SNL 38 years. It's like you become an institution and sort of grandfathered in. I think he's fine. He makes me laugh sometimes, but I don't like, you know, I don't think he's in any sort of danger of being, you know, he's got the longevity. That's about it. I don't think he stand. I think he's fine, but I don't think he stands out on the show other than having the longest tenure. You know, we're not talking about a Will Ferrell, Phil Hartman, Bill Hader level guy for sure. He smiles a lot. He's pleasant. And then Bowen Yang, which stunned the shit out of me also. So I was just like, stunned. I, you know, and it's one of those things where you sort of say to yourself, maybe I'm just so out of touch now with what people want or what, you know, because the Emmys seem to be the peak of the nice guy, let's feel good about ourselves comedy. And then like stand-up comedy is more and more opportunities are veering into the fuck the left. I'm going to like become I'm going to join the angry white brigade. The, you know, the John Birch Comedy Society. So I guess I'm just responding to this being like, I don't feel like my sense of humor is out of touch, but I feel like my direction of my comedy career has no viable path, because you're either John Birch Comedy Society, bitching about the left nonstop and making content that is just like one track mind and not that funny, but is validating angry comedy fans who need like, who want like some of that Trump vengeance, but in comedy form. And the other side is that represented by the Emmys, which just seem to be a showcase of let's feel good about ourselves, which I guess is probably the thing most working against the Crown winning, because of course that the Crown winning could feel like Anthony Hopkins winning the Oscar all over again, even though he totally fucking deserved it. Boy, was that not good for people's feel good. And I feel like if the Crown wins, people are going to be like, this is a white woman tweeting voice. Y'all had all the opportunities to give it to deserving artists of color, and y'all went with the Crown. Miss me with the Emmys, Amber 62. nothing gets the black tweets out of white women when they can start clapping back at white artists on Twitter. So yeah. And then in the supporting actress, Adi Bryant got nominated, which I think was weird. I guess it's her last season. So you just, but really there was nobody else to get nominated for a comedy. Adi Bryant, smiling mom face. smiling mom face. It's her blue steel from Zoolander. She has smiling mom face. Kate McKinnon, she's locked in, but she does a hell of a lot more obviously than Keenan in terms of characters and variety. Rosie Perez for the flight attendant. That's weird. But whatever. Flight attendant, obviously HBO Max was fucking getting their promo on. Cecily Strong from SNL. Now that I approve. I think she's been maybe the most undervalued, underutilized cast member during her tenure. I think she is great. But I would still ask the same question. Were there nobody else doing regular shows that could have been nominated? And then the two women from Ted Lasso, who are really, I mean, I get that Sudeikis is good and solid in the role, and I have no beef with him being nominated. And I think the two women from Ted Lasso are actually the most deserving of the whole cast. So see, that's a little olive branch to Ted Lasso. But boy, oh boy, what a strange, just bunch of bullshit. And then people are like, people are saying one of the biggest snubs for Variety Talk Series was Samantha Bee. And I was like, is it? like, no disrespect, but is it? Like, her being a woman can't be the only thing that makes it a snub. Like, if you tell me it's better than the five shows that got nominated, then we can entertain that. But it seemed like nobody was actually making the argument that it was better than the shows nominated. It was just like, it's a boys' club, so Samantha Bee was snubbed. And it's like, is her show better or as good as the five that were nominated? I don't hear that talk. I don't hear that in the comedy streets. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my point, is that being a woman cannot be the sole basis to a snub. Supporting actor, I find very funny. I'm very partial to Tobias Menzies playing Prince Philip in The Crown. Giancarlo Esposito for The Mandalorian. What, for 9 minutes as Star Wars Gus Fring, he gets a nomination? That's ridiculous. And then what's turning into the best category, basically, year in, year out, because of the way content is being made, best limited series. I May Destroy You is one of only two that I've seen. But I thought I May Destroy You was great. It's going up against Mayor of Easttown, which I've heard even greater things about, and I will be watching soon. Queen's Gambit, which I habitually say I have not watched, and will I ever see it? But I do want to watch it. Underground Railroad, I did see on Amazon, and I found it excruciatingly boring. I enjoyed the book. I found the series to be a chore. I found it to be a fucking artistically indulgent chore to watch. And I also saw WandaVision, which I really enjoyed the first few episodes until it got all Marvel-y. I liked the, and I think the strength of it is, I think why it's gotten all these nominations is because those first three or four episodes were so good, where they were doing all the different kind of sitcoms throughout time. I really enjoyed it until it kind of fell back into conventional Marvel stuff. So can't have too much beef with that because I was enjoying it and I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't have as much interest in it when it kind of became your typical Marvel show, or Enterprise. But that first half of the season, I wish it had continued more like that. So I think that's enough shitting on it, what everybody loves, don't you? I think so. Anything else? I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can take a dump on. No, that's pretty much it. So I'm rooting for no one to win in comedy. I'm rooting for The Crown and The Boys in drama. I'm rooting for, well, as of now, I'd be rooting for I May Destroy You in limited series. But can they really, and this is a real question, Mayor of Easttown, I've heard nothing but great things about. Just like I May Destroy You. Heard nothing but great things. Can verify one, can't verify the other right now. Drama. But what if The Crown and Mayor of Easttown are the two best? They can't. The Emmys will have a hard time doing that, because then they will be roasted on social media for being white. So I see a split there, and I'm trying to think what I think The Crown and I May Destroy You. Now that said, I May Destroy You very well may be the deserving show. Like I said, if I had a vote right now, because of the three that I've seen, I would definitely vote I May Destroy You. I can't weigh in on Mayor of Easttown, but my bet is we see I May Destroy You and The Crown win. And instead of that being seen as a win for diversity and for Netflix and HBO splitting the top prizes, it will be viewed as, I can't believe The Crown beat Pose and Bridgerton and Lovecraft Country and This Is Us. Emmy's too white. And then they will say Emily in Paris too white, because Emily is white. Anyway, that was stupid. Anyway, I guess that's it for this episode. I will probably not watch the Emmys on September 19th, but that's when they are. If you want to watch them, my guess is I will be too busy, or maybe doing a show, or
writing my memoirs, or overdosing on cheesecake. All these things are possible. So here, hope you enjoyed your bonus rant. You know, social media wasn't ready for all this heat. If I couldn't get social media lay off me with lip sync, then I'm sure I couldn't get them to lay off me with pose. So I hope you enjoyed your bonus episode, folks. Have a great week. Go get vaccinated, and hope to see you in Boston, Philly, Raleigh, or New York City. Or if you're a real psycho, come to all four. I know that's not going to happen, but the invitation stands. So thanks for listening, and I will see you next Tuesday.